I will now like to introduce our speaker, Truck from Anaheim.
Hi, I'm Truck. That is, well, my middle name is Truxton, so that's where it comes from, so we can not have that question from, at least 20 of you, because that's the size of the group. Let's see, and everything went out of my head with that. Let's start here. He wanted to introduce me, Truck of Los Angeles from Anaheim. If you're familiar with the Angels, you know that we're still angry at them for doing that. I go to meetings in Orange County. I go to 3 meetings. I don't distinguish between them. They're all my home meetings. I go to 3 meetings a week, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. The Friday meeting is a co-ed meeting, and the other two are men's stags. The Tuesday meeting is a small meeting, which is good for intimacy. Guy said that if you go, you share. If you go 4 times, you lead. And it's about that. For a lot of years, it was 8 people, 4 to 8 people. We've grown. We're up to about 15, 20 now. And I'm maybe considering finding another meeting where I can be intimate again. But that's another issue. The Thursday night is the Orange County Thursday Night Men's Stag. It's the one with the big reputation in Orange County. It's not as big as this one. We have about 60, 80 guys who come on a regular basis. It's also my home meeting, and the Friday night meeting is a co-ed meeting. I have a sponsor. He's my 4th sponsor. My 3rd sponsor I had for 18 years. He's a man I love, and he loved me. I met with him weekly for breakfast, and he listened to me whine for those 18 years. I complained, and never once did he fall asleep, although sometimes his eyes did glaze over. When he died, he wasn't one for expressing love. He didn't say, I love you, when we parted or anything else like that. But when he died, I realized that I had lost. He loved me. 18 years he listened to me, week after week after week. And I realized that that's the love of this program that he'd given me. It was just the thing he did. And when he died, I knew that I had that's a difficult position. I have 25 years in program. I came in June 3rd, 1986. Happy birthday to all the birthday people, by the way. I don't care whether you have 1 month, 1 year, 18 years, or how many do you have? 25, okay. There's somebody in this room probably who has 40. I'll get into this. I have a low voice, and which is why I grabbed the microphone so that you can hear me, so that my jokes will actually be heard and be laughed at. Let's see. We don't have newcomers. But the amount of courage it takes to come through that door, the amount of courage it takes to keep coming back to your second and third, and then a year, and then 2, and then 5, and 10, it's immense. There's always an easier, softer way. Those of us who are here, and that includes everybody, we're lucky, and we're blessed. And so congratulations for however long you've been coming back, because it takes a lot. Even if you can come back a year, look around. There are lots of people who aren't here who came in and left. Okay, I'm going to talk about, I don't like to recount my entire history, even though this is a perfect opportunity, but I got into the habit of, early on I came to meetings. And there's always the guy or gal who repeats what, every time they share, it's the same story. And it's okay for them, but I didn't want it for me. So I like to start near the end and talk about what's current. And in so doing, I like to tell you about what's going on right now with me. Not great stories, not fancy, not funny stories. I hope during tonight's 40-50 minutes, I'll tell you something about God and the steps, maybe some about the traditions, because that's core for me, maybe some about sponsorship. But I do want to tell you where I'm at right now, just as if I was in a Tuesday night meeting sharing with four people. Because otherwise I get sick. Otherwise I get suicidal. And I'll talk about that. That's the spot where it feeds back. Now I've lost my thought twice. I got the suicidal, but that wasn't in the flow of things. Steps, traditions, okay, what the heck. I had lunch today with a sponsee and dinner tonight with a sponsee. If you saw me sneaking, I like to be at the back of the room. I don't like to be the center of attention. If you are aware of the outside literature about alcoholic families, I'm the hidden child, the one who takes care of the family by not calling attention to themselves. Everybody else has something more important to be taken care of, and that's me. So I don't like to be the center of attention at all. And so I like to sneak in the back and just sit down in the back until it's time to come up here, because you don't need to know I'm the speaker until it's time, right? Except there's these safe chairs that David says, oh, go on up there. So I get to walk up and pretend I'm a real human being, actually. And that's some of what I'm gonna talk about here. What's going on currently for me in a lot of different areas is belonging. The Groucho Marx line, I wouldn't be a member of a club that would have me as a member. I don't think that way, but that Tuesday night meeting, I've been going to that meeting longer than anybody else at that meeting. I've been going there more than anybody else, at the longest time in the program with anybody. And I can walk through the doors and see 10 guys standing around having fun and say, I don't belong. They belong. I don't belong. I'm 25 years in program. That's the meeting. That's not the meeting I've been going to the longest. Yes, it is. That's the meeting I've been going to the longest. By about a week. I can still not belong. That's sick up here. There have been some studies that show that the brains of males don't really mature until they're 25. I might have a chance. Okay, I was talking about this with my sponsor, and he died and left me, and I knew that if I didn't find a sponsor quickly, I would fall into a trap of my own making. I mean, I'm 25 years in program, I was 20 then or something like that, I don't remember exactly. And I think I know it all, and I think I don't need a sponsor, or at least I know I need a sponsor, but it's just too easy, it's softer, easier way for me to go on and just, okay, whatever. And end up without a sponsor, or maybe a sponsor in name only. Somebody across the county, somebody I know from the service or something like that, who I never have to call or anything like that, and just go on and do my stuff. And I knew if I didn't get a sponsor quickly, I'd just walk into that trap. So I'm thinking about this and thinking, okay, who can I ask to be my sponsor? And one of the guys in my Thursday night meeting walks up to me. He calls and says, how are you doing? And he's talking about, I'm dealing with the death of my 18-year sponsor. And I knew God had told me who my sponsor was. Problem is, he has half the time and program that I have. And he's about 15 years younger than I am. But this is a God thing. I knew he was the right guy. I did respect his program, much at least. And so I asked him, let me make a recommendation. That's the kind of thing to do. I asked him to be my sponsor, and he told me I intimidated him. That's a good thing in a sponsor, right? We've been together about 5 years and I no longer intimidate him. But again, we meet for breakfast every week. And I whine and complain and he lets me. This is, and I need this program. I need to have you there. And I need to keep talking to my sponsor, to meetings, and to use the phone and everything. I mean, there was a time, I mentioned the suicide thing, there was a time when I stopped sharing. I was in pain, but my pain didn't seem as big as yours. Hidden child stuff again, right? My pain just did not seem as big as yours. You lost somebody, your dog had died, your kid had gone out drinking and got in jail. I mean, it was just terrible stuff, and I didn't have that kind of stuff inside. I was comparing my insides with your outsides. And I shut up. I stopped sharing in meetings. And I got further and further down. And finally, I just decided I just wanted to die. This is like 15 years in program. I just wanted to die. And I wouldn't tell you. And I kept on going that way. And I finally decided that I would starve myself to death. Which is... That begins to tell you how crazy I was in that mental state. I would starve myself to death, right? I would just stop eating. Which is, again, consistent with hidden child and my whole history. I'll just stop eating. Okay? And I went for about a week. I made a deal with God. I said, okay, I just don't want to live. I'm going to stop eating. But God, I'll give you every chance to convince me not. And that means I'll go to an Al-Anon meeting every night or an Al-Anon event every night. Okay. And so I did. My men's day group doesn't sponsor, but we occasionally get together for poker. There was one of those nights and I went. And, on Sunday, I was trying to figure out how I was going to have breakfast with my sponsor. Not eat and not have him figure out what was going on. Which again begins to tell you, I mean, there was nothing right up here. I was just gone because I had not shared that long. And I went to the meeting on Sunday night and it wasn't anything special and nobody said anything special, but after that meeting something went click in my head and it was okay. And driving home from the meeting, I stopped and Carl's Jr., I think. I had a Carl's Jr. big hamburger. They didn't have a $6 million hamburger there, but, you know, I had one of their hamburgers, and it was okay. And at that time, I had both a therapist and my sponsor, and they both bawled me out. They said, if you ever do that again, call me. But one of the things I learned is I have to let you know where I'm at, even if it's stupid. I mean, I got depressed once because my cat had fleas. Yeah, it's okay to laugh at that. But, you know, I need to share that. A guy in our meeting last Thursday, his dog had died, and he shared that. And he was close to tears over that. And I walked up to him afterwards and told him I admired him for sharing that. Because we need to share where we are. Because otherwise, I don't know about you, but I get suicidal. That's really what I. So I had lunch with a couple of sponsees. Lunch with a sponsee and dinner with another sponsee, which is why I was a little bit late coming in the room and had to make a spectacle of myself. And I didn't hear any laughter or anything like that, so it's obvious it wasn't that big a spectacle. Just in my head. And it's interesting because both of these men give me... they're amazing men. They're an example of how much sponsorship can give me. One of them is mentally ill. He's been banned from meetings because of his behavior. This comes back to, in some ways, this belonging issue, because one of the things I had to do was not leave the meeting because they voted him out of it, even though I definitely believed they were doing the wrong thing. I don't know today, that was 5 years ago, I don't know today whether they were right or I was right. It doesn't matter. go on. The other thing about him is that I've been his friend. I've stood by him during this. And this has to do, there are two sides to the belonging issue. Part of the reason I don't belong is because I'm not good enough to belong. The other part of the reason I don't belong is because that's a commitment. I have to be friends with you. I have to, you know, actually do something, do things with you, right? Listen to you. And what I do in groups is I hang around the outside, welcome newcomers, find the ones that I find sympathetic, talk to them, get them comfortable, whatever, and then hand them off to some people who are more in the inner side of groups, and then go out and find more newcomers. I don't really have lasting friendships in program. That's not true, but that's my view of it. I don't see people. I don't attempt to have lasting friendships in that because I'm afraid of that commitment. What happens if they become mentally ill? What happens if there are problems that, you know, they'll expect me to support them? And I'm just a little guy, and I don't have the tools, the emotional tools, to be able to support people. My friend, sponsoring friend, he'd been mentally ill for a long time, but none of us really knew it. He decided to get help. They got the meds. They didn't get the meds right for a while. He went really, really nuts. He was scary. I wasn't there at most of the things that he was at, but I saw him in a very scary thing. He came this close to living on the street. And the reason he's not living on the street today is because he got picked up and put on a 5-day hold. 5150, thank you. He got put on a 5150, and they put him in the Orange County place where they put people. It's called Royale. And I went to visit him. Every day he was there, I went to visit him. I don't know if you've ever been into a mental unit, a psych ward, but you walk into a psych ward, you walk up to the door, and they take from you every aspect of identification you have. Everything. You put it on a table. They wouldn't let me keep my hat. Then you put it on a table outside, and you walk through locked doors that are locked from the outside. You cannot get out. My history is I don't talk a lot with people and stuff like that, so I've never been fully sure that I'm fully sane. And now I'm walking into a lockup ward, and I have to trust the guy outside will recognize me. And what happens if he changes shifts? You know, that was perhaps the scariest thing I've ever done. You know? I took a deep breath and went in and visited my friend. And I did that every day he was there. I didn't help him get out. He got out himself. Thankfully, they adjusted his meds. So he's sane today. And he does take his meds. That's not behavior I think I do. That's a friend commitment. And I walked into that, and it just wasn't any question I was going to do it. I was scared as hell, but I was going to do it. That's a gift he gives me. I get to know that I'm capable of far more than I ever thought I was capable of. And I'm beginning to be willing to tackle things that I didn't think I was capable of. My other sponsee friend just got diagnosed with cancer and given 6 to 10 months. He's doing better with it than I am. I'm a sponsor. I'm supposed to be the wise guy who comforts him and you know, holds him and lets him cry. He's not crying. And I don't know whether, you know, I'm up on all the psychobabble, denial, anger, like arguing, whatever all of those things are. I'm upon all these, not doing any of that stuff. He's saying, here's where I'm at, good plan, all that sort of stuff. But what wisdom do I have to give this guy? But I have to go back and meet with him. And God's provided some answers. The one answer I like best is, God's not done with you yet. Whether you have 6 months or 20 years, God's not done with you yet. There's more God has for you to do in his life. And other than that, I just listen, which is what I do mostly anyway as a sponsor. My friend for lunch, I told him I was going to talk about where I am in this whole belonging thing and how it's really frustrating to me, and we'll get there. But he said, you're not going to tell the orange soda story? I said, well, maybe if it comes up. It doesn't have anything to do with belonging, but it does have to do with God. And David, I'm sorry, you've heard it plenty of times, so you're going to hear it again tonight. But it's a God story, and it's a second step story. Came to believe. Because I was fairly new in program, and I had seen God working in your lives. Somebody would come in who was crazy the week before and could not get the program, which I, of course, understood better than anybody at about 6 months in program. When I was 6 months in program, my father had been 6 years in AA. He'd gotten sober long before I came to Helena. When I was 6 months in program, I realized he was doing his program wrong. And tried to tell him about that, right? So I knew how everybody should work their program. And, you know, I'd see people who had no clue when they would come in 1 week, I was going to a Tuesday co-ed meeting at that time. They would come in 1 week crazy, and the next week they would come in sane. Not totally sane, just a little bit of sane. And, you know, I could see those miracles happening. And then one day, my daughter and I went out ice skating, which we did. She liked ice skating, I liked ice skating. I was learning to ice skate at that point in time. And we went ice skating, and we came off the ice because they took out the Zamboni machine and did it. I'm happy. That demonstrates my intellectual snobbery. I know what a Zamboni machine is. Right? Half the crowd knows what a Zamboni machine is, and you know, but you know, I'm smart. I have to tell you it was a Zamboni machine. It's a Z machine that cleans the ice. Who cares? Right? They're doing the Zamboni machine, and I clump over to the soda machine to get her a soda. And I put the money in the machine. I'm on the ice skate, so, and I'm not an ice skater, really. So I'm wobbly on the ice skates, and sitting there, and I put the money in the machine, and I buy her own soda. And the reason I buy her an orange soda is because there's no caffeine in the orange soda. Because if I buy her a Coke or a Pepsi or a Dr. Pepper or something like that, she'll get hooked on the caffeine, right? Which will lead her to, why don't you, cigarettes. Which will lead her to alcohol, marijuana, and heroin, and I will have hooked my daughter on heroin. So I buy her the orange soda. And I clomp back and I hand her the orange soda, and then I go back to the soda machine to buy myself a drink. Put the money in, and I, you know, my thumb goes to press the button, and it stops about this far from the button. I don't know about you, but paralysis of analysis is one aspect of my disease. And I'm paralyzed, and I am truly paralyzed, because what is going through my head at that moment in time is that what I want is a Dr. Pepper. You know where this is going, right? I want a Dr. Pepper. But if I buy a Dr. Pepper, she will be the brown, see the brown color, And not today, but at some point she will want the Dr. Pepper or Coca Pepsi. She will then get hooked on caffeine, which will lead to cigarettes, alcohol, marijuana, heroin, and I will kill my ruin my daughter's life. I'm sitting there, wobbling on the ice skates, my thumb about this far from the button, and I say, oh God, because I've done this kind of thinking before, right? So I say, oh God. That was a prayer. And God answered. And it wasn't this deep, sepulchral voice. There's another intellectual word for it. Sepulchral voice. It was just the same voice that had been going in my head before, but it was calm and reasonable. And it was, Truck, you're not going to ruin your life. Get what you want. And my thumb moved forward and pressed the orange soda. Because I don't want caffeine for me any more than for her. I mean, I've been telling that story for almost as long as I've been in Illinois, and it never gets any worse. It's God. It's the second step. I don't have big stuff in my life. I mean, the suicide thing was, yeah, a good start myself today, I think, right? But who cares? We get restored to sanity in this meeting. I come in here and I hear the traditions read and I'm home. I go to meetings in Florida and I'm home. And yet, I don't want to belong. I have this with you, push me, pull you. I don't want to belong to this stuff. I can't let myself belong. If I let myself belong, oh, I don't know, terrible things will happen. I might agree with you when you're making an objective mistake or something like that. You know, you say something that isn't quite right, and I'm going to agree with you just because I belong. My father, the alcoholic, was a newspaper man, and very objectivity was a big deal in our lives. But that doesn't really explain it, because I've met other kids at newspaper men, and they don't have this stuff. Some of it is. We were poor. We weren't poor. We were the lower middle class. But I went to a very exclusive high school where they had lots of upper middle class kids, and I was envious. And we were poor between being a newspaper man and being alcoholic. We didn't have a lot of money. We had a roof over our head and food on the table, and we didn't throw dishes. But I always felt less than. And so part of my better than, part of my I can't just be equal. I've got to get better than all of those people who had cars in high school and good clothes and all of that other stuff. I have to be better than. And so there's a snobbery with the way I go at things. I know about Zamboni machines and sepulchral and all that sort of idiocy. Right. And I flaunt it. I flaunt it. I try, at the same time, I don't want to be... I think everybody has a right to belong, and so I don't want you to be overwhelmed by my being the smart guy, but I'm the smart guy. Sure. But that I can't just be part of. And that's what we are in Illinois, part of. Really. I mean, I have no more right than you to say what goes on in the meeting. I'm just one voice among many. That's actually a saving grace. My sister and I often joke she was responsible for World War II and I was responsible for everything else. But if I'm just one voice among many, I'm not responsible for all the world's ills. I'm just one person. If the group decides to vote a member out of the meeting, okay, that's that group's decision. It's okay. I can live with it. I'm just one voice among many. Where it's begun to get to me recently, there's a phrase, my sponsor's not said it to me, but I've heard it from other people so that I don't know it applies. What other people think of me is none of my business. And right now, in my service position, at work, in a number of other areas. I'm struggling. My boss is really angry at me at work. To some extent, it's my fault. To some extent, it's circumstance. I just have to say, okay, I'm going to show up and do what I can. And try not to take it personally. Because what he thinks of me is none of my business. I work for God. And I'm doing the work I do for God. And if he benefits, that's incidental. In service, I have to go on and lead the meeting, even though I've been, you know, whoops, I, you know, did something or something that doesn't go with the rules of Al-Anon. We do have rules, by the way. This big, thick service manual, which is the accumulated group conscience of our many years. I'm the kind of guy, when you present me with rules, I'll say, well, let's look at the spirit of things, so I can go off and do what I want to do. If you're the kind of group that looks at the spirit of things, well, I say, what are the rules, so I can go off and do what I want to do. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, that's just who I am. And I have to continue with my commitment, even though people may not like me. There's a Marlon Brando quote about Marlon Brando once said, if I know one person in a room doesn't like me, I have to leave. Not that he was an emblem of spirituality or anything like that, but I mean, there's some of that same feeling. If you don't like me, just one of you doesn't like me, I mean, wait a minute, maybe I can't get up here and talk, maybe I can't. And I get to walk through that. And that for me is tough stuff right now, because past couple of weeks on a daily basis, I'm beginning to think that I'm not competent, I'm not worth it, I'm not anything like that. And one of the wonderful things about Al-Anon is I go to my meetings thinking and feeling this way, and they're still happy to see me. I'm working on being friends. As I said, mentally ill friend, I'm recognizing that I can be friends, and maybe I can actually recognize that in me and be willing to do that for other people. I have a friend about 3 years in the program. I've known this about me a long time, about this belonging stuff and friend stuff, so I started working on friendships a long time ago. And about 3 years in program, I decided I was going to be friends with this one guy. I'm trying not to take his inventory. But it's kind of, most everybody in the room considers him crazy. Not this room, but the rooms he goes to. He's a lot of fun, he's enjoyable, but they think he's crazy. Why do we hook up with the alcoholic a lot of times? Because we look good standing next to them. Why did I hook up with this guy? That's one. He's on the far, I'm at the north end of Orange County in Anaheim. He's at the far south end of Orange County. So we can't be together that much. So he's safe. I can't really be with him. And the nature of his craziness is that he's very much a talker, and everything goes out, and if you say something to him, it goes in one ear and out the other. So guess what? Anything I do share with him is safe. And this was the man I chose to be my friend. This is the man who, during the years, I was separated from my wife and had no place to go. Had me over for Thanksgiving and Christmas, every Thanksgiving and Christmas during that period. This is the man that did meet me for dinner before the Thursday night meeting. And his taste, his self-worth is even worse than mine. He was eating at one of the Oriental Bowl places. Cheapest Oriental bowl place he could find, And I said, I finally said, I can't stand this. We have to go someplace better. So we went to Burger King. Which was better than that place. He was the first man in the program that I was willing to say I loved. And stand up and say that I loved him. And that was, again, something that I could find myself saying and say, oh, okay. He's consistently able to get me, push my buttons. I mean, I just... But he's still my friend today. And I learned from this program the things like that. Oh, what can I tell you else about that? The belonging issue, even before the business about what you think of me is none of my business, came up, I knew I was struggling with that and knew that I had issues to deal with on those levels. And I've been working on that for about 6 months now. It's interesting, I wanted intellectually to have this happen, that there would be issues that took a year or 6 months or something like that. But up until the past few years, it didn't, so I didn't have anything, if I talked to a group or anything, I didn't have anything, I just had a standard kind of talk that I did. Lately, I've been talking about issues and issues. The last time I talked was to a family afterwards meeting, Alcoholics and Al-Anons together, and I was working on willingness. Willingness is entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step 6. Entirely ready. And my catchphrase for that, the one I challenge my sponsees with and anybody else who talks to me, is, are you willing to go to India and wash feet? Serious question. Serious step. Are you willing to go to India and wash feet? One caveat on that. If God wants you to go to India and wash feet, you will make the decision. You will be happy with that decision. But you need to be that willing. So I waltz into this meeting of mixed meeting, Al-Anons and AAs, and that's the issue I'm working on. And I confront them with that issue. Now, I'm an Al-Anon. My pitch doesn't go over well with AAs. I mean, they just don't relate. But for some reason, they were absolutely silent listening to me. They listened to every word. You could hear a pin drop as I'm talking to this meeting. AAs. And it was only until afterwards that I found out why. This gal got up and started talking about, in AA, they say you have to be willing to go to any lengths, but I'm not willing to go to India and wash feet. For me, it's a kind of innocent question. We don't ask that you be willing to go to any lengths. We're a lot gentler about stuff. That's because, in some ways, our program is a lot harder. It's easy. I don't want to, if you're a double winner or you love a double winner, I don't want to diminish how hard it is to fight addiction, because it is deadly hard. But in one sense, AA's program is a lot simpler. You know when you hit a slip. In Al-Anon, if you're yelling at somebody, is that a slip? Or are you setting a boundary? I did not mean it that way, come on. Are you setting a boundary? I mean, for me, I'm setting a boundary. I may not be setting it the best way, but I am setting a boundary. And I need to do that to learn how to set that boundary. Right? Or maybe you should be keeping your mouth shut. What is a slip? How can you tell when an Al-Anon is having a slip? Their mouth is moving. We don't know. And that's why this is a loving program. It has to be a far more loving program than AA, because I can't judge you. I really can't. I don't know what your slips are. Even if I know you as intimately as I know sponsees, even if I know myself that intimately, I don't know what my own slips are. And I know my history is, I judge myself way, way, way too harshly. I chaired the Orange County Convention, the Al-Anon portion of the Orange County AA Convention, with Al-Anon participation. You can tell how long we've been in Al-Anon by whether we can say anonymity. whether you can say Orange County Convention, Al-Anon participation without losing yourself in the middle of that. You know, if you can get the lingo, you've been around a while. That doesn't mean you had any recovery. It just means you've been around. I was chair of the Orange County Convention, and the previous chair is, they call a spiritual advisor. They tell you how to do things, and they're there rooting for you and stuff like that. And her key phrase was breathe, which I got to say back to her a few times, and I certainly passed on to the chair after me. But at some place in the middle of it, she said, "You are awfully hard on yourself." And that's true, I think, of absolutely every one of us in this room. And so I need to love you, and I need to love me. And you know, I don't care what you've done. One of the speakers early on in Al-Anon talked about going to her sponsor and saying some terrible thing she did, and the sponsor said, "Oh, okay." And she could talk about murdering somebody, and the sponsor would say, "Oh, okay." That's fine. In my opinion, that's what the sponsor's job is, to love you. And if your sponsor doesn't love you, find one of those. If your sponsor doesn't listen to you for 18 years, no matter how stupid you're whining, find one. Get one who does. Oh, we're coming in the last 10 minutes. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. Let's see. What does God want me to talk about? Let's talk a little bit about six-step and entirely ready. With this story. I'm divorced and remarried, and I'm ever so thankful for that. My current wife, she's having surgery tomorrow. She would be here otherwise. She's a blessing. Partially because we're both runaways, we had an argument, we both leave the room, so I mean, it's... You don't have to worry about dishes thrown at our house. But I am divorced from my first wife. And there was a period in that. We weren't separated, but we weren't even ships passing in the night in our house. When I was in the house, she was someplace else. And when she was in the house, I was someplace else. Our marriage was dead, and I couldn't do anything about it. It was one of those times where, you know, I'm going to meetings, and all I heard was people saying, "I made a decision. You guys give me the courage, and I'm going to break up with my girlfriend, or I'm filing for divorce, or we decided to separate." That's all I heard in meeting after meeting after meeting. That wasn't all that was being said, but that was all I could hear. Because I'm such a wimp, I cannot even talk to my ex-wife, my wife then, about it. I have no courage, I'm just this spineless little wimp. And I kept beating myself up for that. And beating myself up for that. Because I wasn't good enough. I couldn't, you know, you guys had courage, but I didn't. When alcoholism strikes, I run away. And finally, I looked at the question from a slightly different viewpoint. Just a little bit different. It was, I'm not a bad person, but I have some emotional skewed needs, maybe. What am I getting out of this situation? What's the payoff? What about the situation is making me feel satisfying some emotional need within me. I have friends who would say that, that it's satisfying some sick emotional need within me. But I don't say that. I have emotional needs, and sometimes they take me in directions that I don't need to go. Especially if I don't have any way of handling it otherwise. Especially if I don't have the tools that you guys give me. And when I looked at it that way, I got some relief. Because I was, and still am to some extent, afraid of intimacy. I didn't want to let you know who I was. I didn't want to share too deeply with anybody. I chose my friend from across the county because he was safe. I mean, I didn't have, that's a pattern with me. So, I'm set up so that I, you know, my wife, she had a part in it too. We had set up this relationship so we weren't intimate. Physically, emotionally, or any other way. We just did not talk. And so I'm safe. However, I can go out and flirt rather heavily, mind you, with anybody I choose. And I'm safe there too. Because no matter how far it goes, I'm still married. No matter how far it goes, I can't be intimate with the people I'm flirting with. So I'm afraid of intimacy, and I've set myself up with the exact kind of situation to keep me from intimacy. I'm safe from that. I'm not saying it's a good thing, and as a matter of fact, just knowing that was enough to get me some relief. Right? I didn't have to. I could start hearing that people were saying other things in meetings rather than I decided to separate. I got to see, hear other things and get that right. And about 3 months later, the pain of the situation got enough, and now I had the knowledge of what it was, and so I was entirely ready to have God remove this defect of character. But I had to look at the payoff first and understand what that payoff was and know what I was giving up before I could do that. It's been a long journey since. I've tried to be intimate with my wife, with people outside, in meetings. I've grown a lot. The marriage didn't last. I'm blessed, actually, because my current wife, as I said, is the most beautiful woman, spiritually, emotionally, and even physically, that I've ever known. And I owe that all to you. I'm just so totally blessed in this program. I can drive up here and get in time and get really angry at the person who's slow ahead of me and the guy behind me who cuts around me and all that sort of stuff and know that it's okay because I will be loved when I come in this room. I can go to meetings in Florida where they don't do program right, I tell you. They do it different. One of the things, if you go any place outside, be careful. One of the things outside is they don't clap. What I mean, any place outside of California, they don't clap. And so there you are at the meeting, and you're about to clap, and you go, right? It doesn't work. Or worse, you do, right? And everybody in the room looks at you because they're clapping. But yeah, hey, we're from California lands, from nuts and fruits, and they know us. When I came into this program, I was sane. I thought logically. I wasn't Spock. I knew better than that because I knew that I had emotions. But I was sane. I thought logically. I was, I had solutions for everybody, and everything worked. And today, I had none of that. I can be as nuts as my mentally ill friend on any given day. And my emotions are all over the place. I have sadness. I have joy. I have pain, life goes on. I'm not the man I want to be. I'm not the man I could be. program to thank for that. Thank you very much.